Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle, the video podcast in association with Sky Sports and NFL UK. Here we are again on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center in San Francisco. I'm joined by my regular partner, Jeff Rimebold. And what a special guest we have with us right off the bat here for today's show. Pro Bowl tight end for the Minnesota Vikings, an old friend of ours from our tour days. Oh, sounds like we were the Rolling Stones, Jeff. From our days on tour, Kyle Rudolph. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back and good to see you guys.
And just first of all, on the tour, your memories of going around and...
Whoa!
Don't tell us everything. But your memories of meeting the British fans and spending time with some of the fans in the UK?
We had a blast, you know, my teammates and myself, to have the opportunity to go over there and spend 5 days in the UK. We had a lot of fun getting to go to every city, interact with the great fans in the UK, and also for us to get to dive into the culture over there away from the show. So we definitely got as much out of it as we could.
Let me just tell you, in those you 5 dived. Days, there was not a Guinness that wasn't at risk in the entire UK. And that last week, when we're driving back from Birmingham, and it looks like 3 athletes had been shot in that van because they were laying
they
all
were getting
over the
their
place.
Rest. They were getting their rest. So, Kyle, obviously a good season for the Minnesota Vikings this year. You come up just a few games short of this game. First of all, before we talk about that playoff game against the Seattle Seahawks, tell us about the kind of season you guys had in Minnesota.
Well, we had a great year. You know, going into it, we had expectations of winning our division, making a playoff run, and, you know, we started our season out here in San Francisco, and we were hoping to end it here in San Francisco. But, you know, obviously we came up short there at the end. But we're happy with how things went for us this year. You know, making progress from our year before, our first year under Coach Zimmer. But, you know, we have expectations of winning championships, and, you know, it's about time for us to get back to work and start working towards next year.
You know, what's really impressive to me, Kyle, is the fact that you lose Sully at center, you know, your leader at center. You lose Phil Loadholt at left tackle. You got a young quarterback. And yet you end up with the league's leading rusher, and you're one missed field goal away from going to the next round of the playoffs. You have to feel good about where you're going.
Definitely. I think, you know, when you have the way our team's been built, the way that Rick Spielman, our GM, and, you know, all the guys in the front office and Coach Zimmer, the way that they've built our team over the years through the draft and bringing in key free agents, you know, on the other side of the ball, bringing in a guy like Terrence Newman, trading for a guy like Mike Wallace, adding those pieces, it really set us up for, you know, you're able to withstand those tough losses early in the season. And, you know, we're built in a way to win football games, to run the football, to play good defense, and to win close games.
You know, Neil and I talked about this during the games that we would broadcast of yours, and I think there aren't enough guys like you in the National Football League, because here's a guy who's one of the preeminent tight ends in the league. In a previous offense, saw the ball a lot more than you do now. You've
unselfish.
Never been selfish.
Unselfish,
you've
yeah.
never been selfish.
Yeah.
You never said, "What about me?" You block your ass off on, you know, so that Adrian Peterson can gain those yards, and yet still are in my opinion one of the 2 or 3 best tight ends in the National Football League. So I got to tell you, I got great respect for you and that unselfish attitude.
Well, thank you. And, you know, for us to win football games, that's what it took this year. You know, some years you get the ball more than others, but, you know, this year for us to win football games, we had to run the football, and we have such a great young defense on the other side of the ball, and we knew that, you know, as long as we possessed the ball and took care of it and moved it down the field, that we were going to win a lot of football games this year.
We're going to look ahead to Super Bowl 50 in a few minutes, but first we have to talk about how it ended, that game against the Seattle Seahawks. And first of all, how cold was it?
It was pretty chilly. You know, -6 degrees Fahrenheit.
I can't remember. Did you have
sleeveless?
Absolutely. You know me well enough.
16-gun salute out there, baby.
Credit to you then.
Absolutely. But, you know, it honestly, it wasn't that bad. And, you know, you laugh when I say it's not that bad at -6 degrees. But the only time you're out there without your sleeves is when you're playing. And when you're running around, your energy's going, your adrenaline's pumping. And then you go to the sidelines and you have a big warm jacket and you sit on a heated bench. So, you know, we are prepared for it, having played in the outdoors all year in Minnesota. But it's
nice
definitely
to look forward to.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to tell you something, though. When I don't know, Bud Grant might be 100 or he's 80, whatever he is. But when
he's tough, he's tough.
Toss, and he's got his shirt sleeves on. You couldn't go back in and put under on.
No, absolutely not. I mean, he's 88 years old, and he's going out for the coin toss with no sleeves on and just so as 50, tough as nails.
53 men
just slipping their jackets off as they saw.
Bud, you're killing me.
Absolutely.
Here.
But I've got a nice stadium to look forward to. But I tell you what impressed me with that game, because obviously you guys were playing Seattle so well. You were so physical against them, but I think you hung together afterwards as well. Everyone was looking at Blair Walsh as the man who missed the field goal, but there didn't seem to be any pointing of the fingers, certainly when you looked at it from a media point of view. Was that really the case in that locker room?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the testaments about our team, the way the guys are in our locker room. You know, there was nobody pointing fingers at Blair. You know, it was, then we would go back and look at that game and reflect on that game. It was, you know, as an offense, as a defense, what could we have done more? So it didn't come down to a kick at the end of the game. You know, as an offense for us, it was, you know, we could have scored a touchdown, you know, when we got that great field position, made the score 13-10 instead of 10-9. That would have been huge for the way the game played out. So I think that's just a testament to the guys that we have in our locker room.
You know, when you caught the ball at the end of the game, the little outcut, you beat I think it was Chancellor.
Yes, Cam Chancellor, yeah.
You beat Chancellor, and you started to run towards the end zone. Thinking back on it now, do you go, maybe I should have just cut back inside?
Definitely. I mean, I'm not the most fleet of foot, so I don't know if I would have made it all the way to the end zone. But, you know, in that situation, you know, when you get the ball, catch it, I believe we got, you know, down inside the 20-yard line.
Absolutely.
And that situation, the time on the clock, you know, you get out of bounds every time and save the time for us to try to line up the field goal for Blair to knock it in.
Now, you faced both these teams, these Super Bowl teams, in the last couple of years. You played Denver this year. You played Carolina last year. And you were just saying before we came up on set, before Atlanta knocked off Carolina, you were the last team to beat the Panthers. So what are we looking at with these two defenses in the Super Bowl 50?
Well, you got two of the best defenses in football. You know, playing against Denver this year, they're one of the best defenses I've ever played against from front to back. You know, the rushers that they have on the edge, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and then the guys that they have covering in the back end, Harris and Aqib Talib, safeties T.J. Ward, Stewart. You know, they just, from front to back, they have it all. And then you go look at the Carolina defense, and I think that's one of the fastest defenses in football. You know, the speed that they have on all levels, especially at the linebacker position, and Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis.
You know, you talked about those two great ends, outside linebackers, whatever they really are, DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. As a tight end, you're going to have to block those guys during the course of a game. What advice would you give Greg Olsen going into this thing to block them well?
Well, fortunately for Greg, I think he maybe used a little differently than I was when we played Denver.
They do like to keep Ed Dixon in, the other tight end. They like to go keep extra bodies in the Carolina Panthers, don't they?
Absolutely. And that you have to. If you're going to have success in throwing the ball downfield, whether it's to Ted Ginn or to Greg, somebody in the backfield, whether it's Mike Tolbert, Jonathan Stewart, Ed Dixon, they're going to have to be helping those tackles out, because, you know, you can't leave those two guys one-on-one with right tackle, left tackle.
You know, even though your kind of role has changed a little bit in the new offense in Minnesota, when you evaluate Carolina and you look at their safeties, particularly Roman Harper, that's got to be a guy that you think is a plus advantage for you in terms of being able to cover Olsen in the inside of the field.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, Carolina safeties, I think that's one of the things that gave them problems when they played Atlanta earlier this year. You know, they got the ball to Julio Jones down the field and, you know, had a lot of success. But, you know, Roman Harper, for, you know, as old as he may be, he has that much knowledge, and there's a reason why he's still around this league. Right. And then, you know, Kurt Coleman opposite him has had a great year. And then you look at the flip side, you look at Greg Olsen versus the Denver safeties. And, T.J. Ward is probably one of the better safeties I played against this year. And, you know, that'll be a fun matchup to watch for.
Yeah, you look at T.J. Ward and Darian Stewart, especially in the championship game. And, yeah, they say you can't hit across the middle of the field. Those two still hit. Those two are very physical, aren't they?
Absolutely. And they play very physical with their coverage as well, coming down. And, they're tough players. And, you know, they're definitely a big reason why this Denver D is so good.
When you look at that defense, Kyle, and obviously it all starts with those guys up front, you know, but Trevathan and Marshall, two really fine linebackers. But Wade Phillips and his ability to dial up so many, it was amazing to me when I watched the New England game. He had Brady really, really frustrated and confused.
Yeah.
What is it about what they do that's so unique and tough?
Well, it's funny. Actually, one of the things that I noticed most playing that game was the amount of zone that they ended up playing, and that's something that was different. You know, when we played them week four early in the year, you know, they lined up and they played man coverage, and that's all they want to do. And I think the Patriots kind of expected that going into the game. And you could see a lot of the plays they were calling with crossers and stuff.
Right.
You know, they were expecting to get a lot of man coverage, and, you know, that's a credit to Wade Phillips and, you know, his ability as a play caller to mix things up and keep Tom Brady off balance.
Now, Kyle, we've been having special guests come and join us this week on Radio Row, and we've been asking about favorite Super Bowl moments. So all the great, glorious, iconic moments. I prefer to think of things that annoy me about the Super Bowl because I'm British and I like to have a moan up. So you can go two ways. You can either do your pet hate of the Super Bowl. Mine is there's too many photographers on the field at the end of the game. Or you can go your favorite Super Bowl moment. Do you have one?
Oh, I'd have to say my favorite Super Bowl moment, you know, I can think back probably, I think the biggest thing that sticks in my mind is 2007, the Giants and the Patriots watching that game and everybody just assuming New England was going to win and be undefeated. And that last drive, Eli Manning to David Tyree, the catch, and then the touchdown to Plexico Burress. You know, just that whole sequence of events is a Super Bowl memory that I'll definitely think about forever.
Now, I was just thinking about your shiny new stadium that we mentioned just a few minutes ago. That means they're probably not going to give up a home game. So we need to get the Vikings back as a road team for an international series game. If we're going to get
you better call Guinness.
I'm just thinking if we get the crew back together and get on the road again. I mean, would you like to play another game in the UK?
Oh, absolutely. We had a blast. You know, especially being the home team, we were able to come over and incredible atmosphere. The fans, you know, they've really kind of bought into our brand of football, and you know, and it's not just Vikings fans. They're fans of the NFL and all of our games. So you know, I hope that, you know, like you said, we're probably not going to be a home team over there anytime soon, but hopefully we can be a road team.
When you think about that now, when you're talking, if you're talking to a friend of yours on another team, he's going to come over and play in the international series, going to come over and spend some time in the UK, what are the things that you'd say, hey, listen, take advantage of this because it's a maybe once-in-a-lifetime shot?
Football, we're talking football. We're talking football, Kyle.
I was going to tell him to find
happy hour.
I was going to find you two. You got to find Jeff and Neil, and they'll take care of you from there. You're good to go.
And that is probably a good place to end our interview. So we thank you, Kyle, for joining us today. So we are looking ahead to Super Bowl 50 on Sky Sports 1 and Sky Sports 3. We're on air from 10 p.m. on Sunday night. It's the Carolina Panthers against the Denver Broncos live from Levi's Stadium in San Francisco. Welcome back to Inside the Huddle on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center. Now, myself and Jeff Reinbold were feeling pretty good about how we were dressed until Nick Ferguson rolled in and made us look bad. There is the best dressed man in the Super Bowl Media Center.
So that's what 10 years in the NFL
our
do for
old
you
friend
right there.
From NFL Europe, from the CFL, from the NFL with the Denver Broncos and other teams, Nick Ferguson, thanks for joining us.
Oh, Neil, it's always a pleasure. We were just talking about before we went on air how Neil's covered me in two leagues, and Jeff Reinbold sitting to my left has coached me in two different leagues, so I'm honored to be here with these two men.
And I live through it.
We live to tell the tale. And just on the, before we get to your NFL career, just let me just say, in NFL Europe, best face paint ever, hands down in any sport. What you used to wear on game days was fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that, and luckily I had a guy in Alex, he's no longer around with us, but he allowed me to do that. He promoted it. So it just helped me be a part of the game and be part of the fanfare that the fans in the UK and NFL Europe had, which, Neil, you know, when I came to back in the United States, I didn't get a chance to do that anymore. That was one thing I was disappointed about. The NFL wouldn't allow me to paint my face up, but if they did, it would be face paint every game.
I'm glad we're at, just before we get on to, you played Buffalo, the Jets, Houston. Your longest stint was with the Denver Broncos, of course, so you're a happy man this week with the Super Bowl coming up. But we're all smiles here. This man cut you. What's going on? Why are you friendly?
Because he proved he was right. Yeah. Because when I cut him. Now,
yeah, look into that camera and tell him.
I'm going to tell the truth. I cut him, and he looks right across the table and says, "You're making a mistake. I'm not going." I said, "Nick, you're cut. You got to go." Long story short, we cut him. We bring him back. He plays for us. He makes the Buffalo Bills, and he says to me, "I'm never going to get cut again." And I said, "Nick, this is the National Football League. You get cut tomorrow." 10 years later, I go see his. I take my son and we go see him play his last game, and he walks off the field, says it's over. It was an awesome experience.
And I guess with you, when whether it was NFL Europe or the NFL, you to me were the epitome of the more you can do. You know that's that phrase you have. The more you can do, the longer you can last. And you did that, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I did that. And this guy to my left once told me, you know, when you're trying to understand a defense, don't try to understand all the X's and O's. Break it down into concepts. And that's why, you know, the career I had, it wasn't just because of athletic ability, but it was just understanding the concepts, defensive schemes, and what the offense was trying to do to you. So I do owe Jeff a lot. Even though he cut me, I do owe him a lot. So,
hey, you know what? And let me tell you something. He came about this close to getting cut when he was with the Jets because Herman Edwards calls me and goes, I don't know what to do with that freaking guy. You know how Herman is. I don't know what to do with him. I said, what's the matter? And he goes, I can't get him to understand. You don't hit your own receivers going across the middle. You know,
in today's NFL, I couldn't play because, I was giving them my check every week. And I played for a couple of guys, you know, George O'Leary down at Georgia Tech. And he always said that you had to do things 100%, you know, always on fire. And for me, there was no such thing as, okay, well, we're going to do it half speed.
Right.
Because like Jeff said, I don't know. My body doesn't know half speed. All I know is full speed.
All right, now let's talk a little football about this game, all right? And I know Neil's got some questions for you. I got to ask you, as a secondary guy, you're talking about two great secondaries. You know, the Thieves Avenue on one side, and you got Tlaib and Harris and all those guys in Denver. Who do you like best and why in that secondary matchup?
Well, for me, I like Chris Harris because Chris Harris reminds me a lot of myself.
Yep.
He dons the same number 25. He was undrafted. He did it the hard way. He earned his stripes. And you talk about a corner who can play both right and left side.
Yeah.
Josh Norman proclaims himself as the best corner in the league, but he only plays on one side of the field.
Yeah.
To me, that's the same thing people said about Richard Sherman. If you are the top corner in the NFL, you need to follow the opposing team, their top receiver. He doesn't do that. So I like that matchup, and I want to see how he matches up well with Ted Ginn in his game.
And you coached this summer, didn't you? And this with the Broncos, working with the safeties in the OTAs and mini camps. So tell us about that defense with, I guess, under Wade Phillips. I think they're masterfully led by Wade Phillips. I think he's a fantastic coach. Your thoughts on those guys. And you said actually that you can't hit today, but those safeties for Denver are still, they're trying as much as they can within the rules. They're pretty physical.
Well, you have to understand, in Wade Phillips' type of defense, he needs fast-flowing attacking safeties. T.J. Ward and Darren Stewart definitely gives them. So we have to see, you know, how, if they're going to be healthy for this game on Sunday and if they can play for 60 minutes. But if you look at what Wade was able to do when he was with the Houston Texans, he didn't have all these personnel pieces, but he was still able to create pressure up front. So now he has Von Miller, Malik Jackson, and he has DeMarcus Ware. And that helps out the secondary. And anyone who understands football,
if
the pressure helps the back end helps the pressure. So it's just kind of working in continuity with one another. But he's one of the best, Wade Phillips, that is scheming and creating matchups.
Now, you've played football. You've tried your hand at coaching. Of course, you joined us. You have a TV career, and you joined us on Sky Sports. So you're going to follow Jeff into coaching now you've dipped your toe in the waters?
Well, here's something really interesting. Ever since I played, right, Jeff has been kind of nudging me to go into coaching. And I tell my wife this. I said, well, it was one of those things that I said that I wouldn't want to do. Just like I said, I didn't want to be involved with the media, but yet here I am. So to answer that question, you know, it would be great, and it would be a dream of mine to one day coach alongside of Jeff. Hopefully at some point down the road it may happen, but I just love everything about coaching, to be able to, you know, teach a guy in a classroom and watch him go out and do the same thing that you were trying to get him to do, or teach him in fundamentals and details, the same thing Jeff did for me.
It's got to be different, hasn't it, from obviously standing on the sidelines and watching and as a media person to get back out on the field. I mean, I know you're not playing, but to be back in the smell of the grass and all that stuff.
Oh, listen, I throw my hat at the television every Sunday when I watch watch certain formations. And my son is like, Dad, well, you know, what are you doing? If you can't watch football without getting upset, you don't need to watch. But like I said, Jeff taught me a lot. So when I look at the game, I look at it as a student of the game. So that was one of those things, Neil, that fires me up about the aspect of coaching.
Yeah.
You know what, it's really cool today, and I went over and I sat down with Wade and we talked a little bit, and I said, Wade, you know, one of your favorite and my favorite guys, we're going to have him on NFL UK today, and he kind of looked at me a little perplexed, like, who could that be? And I said, Nick Ferguson, and his smile got just like this. And, you know, when you get that kind of reaction out of a guy like Wade, who's coached a million guys, you know what a special guy this guy is.
Yeah. It was great playing for Wade. And every time I've seen him over my 10-year career, even doing the coaching internship with the Denver Broncos this summer, I thank him every time, because if he didn't give me an opportunity, like Jeff, I wouldn't be sitting here with you guys now.
All right, enough of that flowery stuff. Let's get down to the brass tacks. That guy right there, number 18, the sheriff, all right? Skills have diminished. Can they win with him at quarterback?
Yeah, they can, because when we look at what today's NFL is, I know we talk about elite quarterback and, you know, the passing game, you know, moving the ball down the field vertically. But to me, when you get to this point, it's all about defense. And for Peyton Manning, we're seeing a different person than we've seen all year long and all in his entire career. So all he has to do is not lose the game.
Right.
Don't turn the ball over
and
in a key situation.
He's accepted that that's a different role for him.
Yeah, I mean, in a couple of interviews he had this week, he said, listen, I'm in a Super Bowl, but not because of my own merit, because
and
of the defense.
That's a mouthful for a guy that's always had the team on his back. Neil has a tremendous statistic and dug it up. They had, Nick, 7-3 and outs in that game last week against New England. I just really think if they go out there and they're 3 and out, so much pressure then goes on the defense, field position in the kicking game.
Yeah.
And if they get behind, can they come back if they get behind?
It's hard for this team or any team to do that, especially at this point. We saw Seattle try to battle back. But to me, you have to stay balanced. They have to try to find a way to get that running game on track. Thomas Davis is nursing a broken forearm. Say what they want to say by putting a carbon fiber protector on it, but the Broncos need to test that. I mean, I'm not advocating to hurt anyone.
Well, it's that sort of guy. Well, in any sport, if any opposition shows a weakness or shows an injury, you're gonna try and test that. It's not just football.
Yeah.
That's anything.
Right. You have to. And I would be shocked and amazed if they didn't attack him right off bat. But as far as the offense is concerned, they're very talented. You talk about the number 3 announcing in that New England Patriot game, but to me, it's not just Peyton Manning, the offensive line, and don't forget, there was a couple of drops by the running back and the wide receivers.
Yeah. Right. Now let's talk about a guy that I think could be an X factor in this game, an old teammate of yours, Owen Daniels. Talk about what he brings to that Bronco passing game as a flex tight end, like we saw him do the double moves last week against Jamie Collins and for 2 touchdowns.
Well, for me, I was excited when he signed with the Broncos. I told a lot of people, I said, well, you can expect that with him. He was a teammate of mine when we played with the Houston Texans. And I said, well, he has a lot of wiggle. He has a lot of shake, especially down in that red zone area. So, to me, they got to get him involved. And then go back to the Patriots game. We saw the Broncos go to the kind of stretch play and the boot action.
Yeah. Right.
That's how you have
to
get
Kubiak's offense, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his offense. Yeah. That's Kubiak 101. But to me, you got to attack those linebackers. Make Luke Kuechly actually cover for 60 minutes. Carolina, great defense, but you just can't scale back your scheme. You got to attack these guys.
How important is
that? What about Luke Kuechly, though? I mean, incredible.
Yeah, their ability to run the football. Don't you think that Anderson and Hillman have got to be able to run the ball? And you've got to take some threes, some twos to get a 6, to get a first down. They just can't go out and try and throw it around the yard against Carolina.
No, they can't adopt that Patriots strategy where we're just going to go throw the entire game. You can't do that. You have to have balance. And like you said, when you're talking about the running back position of C.J. Anderson and then Ronnie Hillman, you got to get those guys involved. Sometimes you get the screen game because you know as a coach, Neil, you know this too, covering the game, the way that you back that defense off, if you run a couple of screens, you start to cut those guys, start to get them to worry about their legs.
Yeah, yeah.
But the offensive lineman got to do a great job of not controlling Starlin Tulele and Kawan Short. But you got to get to that second level. You got to get on those linebackers and sustain those blocks to curate those creases so the running backs can get through. If they're able to do that, the Broncos win.
Nick, last question as we wrap up. Tell us how you tackle Cam Newton. As a defensive back, and you were playing in this league for many years, if you were facing Cam Newton, I mean, we're talking a different animal, aren't we? I saw him today at his press conference. That's a defensive end. That is a defensive end playing quarterback in the NFL.
Well, that is true, but just like anything, no man, no animal can run without their legs.
Right.
So to me, in my tackling strategy, I always aim for the waist and then just kind of work my way down. And like a crocodile, you go into that kind of violent roll, put those heels together, now you bring Cam Newton down. That's how you do it.
Let me ask you a question. Would you bring your arms and wrap them up
Well, of course. Of course. There's no such thing. I'm going to run into his body. He's 246 pounds.
Wait a second. Let's go back to the World Bowl. You just brought it back a memory. I can't. What was that running back from Scotland bouncing off of you?
Aaron Stecker.
You knocked him about 5 yards sideways, but you didn't knock him down.
Well, okay, listen, Neil, Jeff.
Still getting coached up. See?
Still, at this point, you know, 10 years in the NFL, he's still coaching me up.
I'm starting to blink.
But here's the thing. Every tackle is not going to be perfect. The ideal job is either you make the guy lose ground or you bring him down no matter how you do it.
You said that was like something like a crocodile. If I just throw myself in front of Cam and hope that he trips over me, is there a name for that or not?
No, there's no name for it.
There's no place for Jeff, cut me now then. I'm not going to make it in the NFL.
Right. As a Denver Bronco, we got a huge Bronco following in the UK. I want you to look right in that microphone right there, and you tell me, and you tell them that they're going to win. They've got to have some faith because it's all Carolina blue right now.
All right, let me tell you something. If you're a Denver Broncos fan, there's one thing you know for sure. Unlike any other organization in the NFL, we don't hope. We have a certain level of expectations. So get rid of the hope, get rid of the faith, whatever you use, good luck charms, you got to have faith because we expect to win. That's the Broncos. Go Broncos.
All right. Well, there you go. That's a good place to end. And Nick Ferguson, we thank you for joining us today on Inside the Huddle. Great to relive old times. Good stuff, my man. So we are looking ahead to Super Bowl 50 on Sky Sports 1 and 3, Sunday night from 10 p.m. from Levi's Stadium in San Francisco. It's the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers. Yes, we are still here on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center in San Francisco. And Jeff, what a couple of great guests. What a great day. Well, here we are now. Feels like it's ramping up. I know the players' commitments have come to an end today, but the city is coming alive.
You know what? It's amazing. Every day it's got a little bit better. The guests have got better. The show's gotten better. But what's interesting today, when we went out to the press conferences, you saw two different quarterbacks handling the press conferences in two very different ways.
Yeah, because Peyton Manning is an absolute politician with that stuff, Jeff, all the time. And I know by this stage of the week, they've been asked the same questions time and time again. And Peyton Manning dealt with it very well. We know that yesterday Cam had a little bit of a moment where he told the media, well, you've asked me these questions before. And today I watched Cam's press conference and he kind of trudged in and he had a hood up and then to me, I thought he looked a little bit more how his press conferences used to be a couple of years ago. Some of those sort of little bit sulky, little bit like he wasn't dealing with it quite as well.
Well, I think people got to understand, number one, that the intense scrutiny that he's been under. They question everything about him. The questions, no matter how you phrase them, they're the same question over and over and over again. It was a great thing. Snoop Dogg was at the press conference, kind of saved him a little bit, gave him something to smile about. But I think that might be a little look into some of the, you know, you talk about why teams that come to the Super Bowl the first time typically don't win it.
Right.
It's all of this that goes on, all the pressure, all the hype, all the expectation.
There were so many people around Snoop Dogg, I never got to ask him why he can't spell the word dog. There are now millions of people around the world that spell the word dog with two G's. Snoop, what's that all about?
All I know is I'm doing an interview with Vernon Davis.
He gatecrashed your one.
I'm doing an interview, and Snoop comes to try and cut my grass. I said, Snoop, I'm working here, man.
He did the same when I was talking to Trey Turner, the offensive guard for the Panthers. Trey's chatting away quite happily. Snoop walks in, and Trey completely blanks me, and that's Snoop's his man then, and that was it. The interview was over. I got to speak to Graham Gano, Jeff, the British-born kicker.
He's got to get out of the weight room. That guy looks
He's
like
big,
a tight
right?
end.
He's
Holy
big. But it was great. He was so excited. He hopes. He said, yes, I'd like us to win by a large margin, but secretly he wants it to come down to a winning field goal. He is not going to shy away from the pressure if that chance comes.
Well, and I know another guy that I had a chance to visit with, Emmanuel Sanders. What an amazing visit with him. And you could sense Emmanuel played in this game in the Super Bowl as a rookie, caught about three balls early in the game, hurt his foot, couldn't finish. They lose to the Packers. This means an awful lot to him. And I think another thing that when you went around that Denver media group and you talked to the players, there's an awful lot of sentiment. They want to take care of those two old G's, DeMarcus Ware and Peyton Manning. They want to see those guys go out with a ring before they leave the game.
Yeah. I did a couple of one-on-ones. Greg Olsen, I spoke to Kurt Coleman. I know you spoke to Roman Harper. The sense I got from the Panthers was that they know this is not just any Super Bowl. this is a really special one. This is the Super Bowl to top all Super Bowls, being Super Bowl 50. They're really appreciating the moment. And Graham Gano actually said, I hope we get to kick off. He's already thinking of that
He's
moment.
He's going to bury that one, baby.
You know, imagine that with all the flash bulbs going off. I mean, the players, I wondered if they'd just give me the it's just another game, but they're not. They know this is a special Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it was kind of a really interesting mix, because when you talk to Roman Harper and you're standing there and the guy's got all his gray hair on and you look at it and he's talking about, you know, the thieves and that the band of thieves, the merry band of thieves. I said, are you the Prince of Thieves? He goes, no, I'm the CEO of Thieves.
There
and they've got a really good thing going in Carolina. Those guys like each other. They spend time together. I think the team is very, very close. Not to say that Denver isn't, but I just think it's really a unique thing that Ron Rivera has built in Carolina.
And just as we wrap up, Jeff, for the players now, they're done. That's important for them, isn't it, to have a little bit of time to decompress before the game or work themselves up before the game, but they don't have to talk to us guys anymore.
Well, I think they get to the point with, and I know this, I've been in championship games, and you get to the point with the media where it's just like, hey, please let us go do what we do.
Right.
We've waited for this moment since we were little boys. Everybody's dreamt of this moment. Some guys never experience it. We're 3 days away now from kicking it off.
Yeah.
Let's just get ready to play football.
There was a great quote on NFL Network yesterday from Michael Irvin. He said, you never dream of playing in a regular season game. In your back garden when you're catching passes, you dream of playing in the Super Bowl, right?
Always the Super Bowl.
All right, so we're going to wrap up this edition of the Inside the Huddle podcast, but I always like to throw it over to Jeff. To do the goodbye, so
yeah,
Jeff,
but
take it from
here. I got a little special. Kenyon, come on in here. We got a special guest, our man Kenyon. Kenyon, come on in here. Do you know what team that is?
Jeff, they say never work with animals and children.
All right, Kenyon, I want you to tell me who's going to win the Super Bowl.
I don't know.
He doesn't know, Jeff.
You don't know? This team or that team? That team.
That team, there
the
we go.
Broncos. Great job, Kenyon. Can you give me a little dap?
Good
right,
job,
brother,
man.
Thank you.
Good
and for
job.
That, we say aloha.